You're still in shock.
No, I'm in hell.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 4, Episode 21, Devil in a Wet Dress, Ellipses, Yuck. And now here are your hosts.
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Before we proceed, Dave.
It's nice to be back.
And before we welcome Sarah back, Dave, do you know why it's called Devil in a Wet Dress? Because you were here for the previous episode. I want to know if you were paying attention at all to what happened at the end of episode 20.
Wait, hang on. This was their Tidal Wave disaster episode?
Very close. Welcome back, Sarah!
Thank you. Thank you so much. Hello, everybody. I am back. And thank you so much to the Fug Girls for covering for me in my absence. I really appreciate it. And thank you as well to everyone for their kind wishes about the passing of my mom, the illustrious Barb, whom we have mentioned many times as having graffitoed Brandon's car. Of course, that was not the case, but in our hearts it is. And now she's doing that in heaven. So thank you so much. And now I'm back and ready to talk about this nonsense.
Point of order. Do you think the car made it to heaven too?
Yes.
Yes.
Special order? Okay. All right.
Or they just have like a row of cars for her to do her thing. Flowers.
Are we talking about Mondale?
No, it's in his next car that didn't have a name. Okay. The Mustang. The lemon.
Banana colored Mustang.
I know that much, Tara. I know the car was called Mondale.
Yeah, good job.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay, so also, we have a Patreon on which you can find our bonus episodes, again with this is. Episode 72 of that fine program is dropping November 19th. Let's read the Beverly Hills 90210 issue of Dynamite, which I really am struggling not to pronounce Dynamite, because that's a different thing.
It's our particular copy is very special for reasons I'm sure we will discuss.
Mm-hmm.
Please note, we're going to be taking off next week for American Thanksgiving. On November 22nd, there will be two unlocked Patreon episodes in the main feed. I didn't really think of this when I suggested two true crime ones, but it's also an anniversary of a pretty important true crime that day.
Oh, yes.
R.I.P.
Yes, indeed.
JFK. But anyway, it's going to be Blondes and True Crime Twofer. It'll be Again With This 51, where we talked about the Courtney Thorne Smith TV movie Midwest Obsession. And again with this 57, in which we talked about Jenny Garth in Left 4 Dead, : the Ashley Reeves story. So because of the holiday, our November episode of Again With Them will also be pushed, and we will remind you ahead of time, but that's going to drop December 9th. So look out for that.
Also, because we're taking off Thanksgiving week, we will tell you now that again with this episode 73, dropping November 26th, will be Let's Watch Heather Locklear, Linda Gray, and Tracy Nelson, and Cameron's mom Highway Heartbreaker.
Yes.
That is on YouTube. The print is not great, but you'll get the gist.
It's good enough.
Yeah, it's plenty good enough. We are back to regular programming on the main feed with Melrose Place, Season 4, Episode 22 on November 29th. That was a whole bunch of numbers. Just trust us. We're going to keep you posted on all this stuff.
Yeah, there's going to be stuff. And we thank you for your indulgence as we all have a holiday. And probably most of you are going to have a holiday, too. So let's get through it all together. Patreon.com/againwiththis. Let's talk about Devil in a Wet Dress, starting with the D-plot. Matt's feelings get in the way of Alan's career. Once again, Matt is going to see Alan at the set of what we now know is called Restless Hearts. That's the title of the soap. For some reason, he's back on set when he is waylaid by Gloria Bryan, the producer that we met a couple of episodes ago. And she remembers that Matt is a doctor when he corrects her on the specifics. She says he dreams of being a doctor, just like Alan dreams of being a successful actor. And Matt idiotically asks what would prevent that from happening. And she's like, the photo of the two of you looking gay in a tabloid, the thing you and Alan were fighting about the last time viewers saw you, Matt. But she's basically like, do whatever you want at home, but when you're in public, don't fuck with my money. Also, quit coming by here all the time. I'm paraphrasing.
Barely.
Yeah. So Matt does make it inside on this particular day, because then we're watching Alan shoot a love scene with his on-screen partner in a bed while Matt watches looking pissed. And when Angela and Alan get out of bed, we see that this actor is Jeri Ryan, 7 of 9.
Amazing. Yes. She looks 9 of 9 as far as I'm concerned. Poor yeah. kid. But we'll get to it.
She looks so pretty. Alan calls her over. Her name, the actor's name in the show is Valerie Madison, to meet Matt without saying who Matt is to him and taking off immediately to talk to the director. And in his absence, Valerie and Matt both behave the way real human beings probably would, in a way that's jarring because it's so natural. Clip two.
So, Matt, did you like the scene?
Yeah, I can't believe you do that with all these people watching. Must be hard being romantic with someone you barely know.
Are you kidding? I look forward to the steamy sex scenes. A fewer lines to memorize.
Your husband must hate it.
Actually, I'm unattached at the moment.
So, Matt, did Val tell you that I invited her over for dinner tomorrow?
No. But I'm sorry. It's too late for me to change my rotation at the hospital.
Well, hey, it's okay. I mean, we need to run lines anyway.
Don't worry, Matt. I won't sap all Alan's energy. I like to leave my leading men begging for more.
That was the first time I think I've ever heard a "your husband must hate it" from someone who wasn't like fishing to find out if he could hit on you. Like, that's the only part that's weird. But I love their just like friendly vibe.
Yeah, it's nice.
You can tell she's
The only problem with this scene is that Alan comes back into it. Fucking yep. Alan.
Because Alan's not good or interesting.
Mm-mm.
So Matt gets back to his place the next night. He finds Val and Alan standing in the living room making out. And he's like, I hope I'm interrupting. And since they have scripts in their hands, it's obvious what they're doing. And he's embarrassed once he figures that out. And they both laugh. And we hear this, clip three.
Matt, this is my fault. Alan isn't exactly my type. I'm a lesbian. I made him swear not to tell anybody, but I didn't think he'd include you.
Yeah, well, hey, I'm a very discreet guy.
It's all my jabbering yesterday about you having to kiss strangers.
It was really very sweet.
You know what? Wait until I get together with your girlfriend to plot my revenge.
Well, let's hope you have better luck finding her than I have. I wasn't kidding about being single.
You see, Gloria's notorious for keeping gay and lesbian actors in the closet.
You know, I got a dose of her logic yesterday. What's her problem? It's just television.
Not to daytime fans. The show's important to all of us, and Gloria uses that to get her way. And getting defiant about it only makes it worse, trust me. Being single wasn't a choice for me. I was involved with someone, and I loved her very much, but Gloria scared her away. Don't let her ruin your relationship, too, okay?
Poor Val. More Val.
No, I like her so much.
So do I.
I mean, I always liked Jeri Ryan, so yeah.
I mean, speaking of true crime blondes, her.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Her sketchy husband, ex. Mm-hmm. This exchange is the first time anyone in this plot line has seemed like they knew, ever, like, met a gay person. Like, the way that they're all just, like, chatting in a friendly way and Matt making a reference to, like, I'm going to get together with your girlfriend and get back to you. It's like, okay, like, more of this. Less of the tragedy, please.
Yeah, seriously.
Anyway, moving on to our C-plot. Amanda looks for couple friends in all the wrong places.
Ooh, yeah.
At a table at Eclipse, Alicia stares so hard at Peter that he is forced to comment on it. And she basically says she's not sure she can trust him, but in a flirty way. And when Peter says he cares about her a lot, she thinks she knows where he's going. And he explains that Bobby has forbidden them from seeing each other because he thinks Peter's using Alicia to get at Bobby. But actually, he used Bobby to get to Alicia, which, like, what? Follow that logic through, please.
Yeah.
Makes no sense.
No. Yeah. Oh, Alicia.
No. So Alicia's pissed about Bobby. She put her professional reputation at risk for the sake of his business. And now he doesn't trust her. But Peter says Bobby actually doesn't trust him, meaning Peter. And he's also turned on by how enraged she is by all this. And she acts like she is not turned on by him being turned on by her, but is not convincing. And then Alicia's visiting Peter at the medical office on another day. And when she confirms no one else is there and Peter isn't expecting any patients, she locks the door. And in an off-screen conversation, she apparently resigned her job with Bobby. So now there's no reason she and Peter can't fuck. But he keeps protesting that he doesn't want to be responsible for quandering a great job, which is it? A great job.
Also, he's protesting way too much, even for a soap opera and for TV characters who have to be situationally stupid. And I know he shows up later, but my note on the scene was like, why did this happen off screen? Could they not afford John Enos's day rate today? And then there he is later. And I was like, so this episode is a little weird.
It
honestly.
Is. So she clarifies she turned in her resignation. But Bobby didn't accept it. So now she has both a job and Bobby's promise to stop harassing her and Peter. And nothing has ever made Peter hornier, apparently. Like, they for real roll off the couch onto the floor, which you can see in the visual aids, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And at Bobby's office some number of days later, Amanda's just arrived for a meeting when Alicia enters, brusquely drops some papers on Bobby's desk, curtly greets Amanda, and leaves. Clip four.
Did the temperature just drop 20 degrees in here?
Alicia's still angry because I interfered in her love life. She wants things strictly business.
Which is fine in my office, where I have to manage 50 employees. But Alicia is your entire staff. Right now, she could use a little ego massaging, and so could Peter.
I don't even want to think what that might entail.
Well, it could be as painless as dinner together. I know you think Peter's got a hidden agenda, but you need Alicia on your side, and she knows it. I'll handle the reservations, you extend the invitations. It won't mean a thing coming from me.
If you're this good at manipulating people, how do I know you're not pulling the same scam on me?
You don't.
Couple of things. One, I'm not sure I would take management tips from Amanda, given all the shit that's always going down at her office.
Seriously.
That's number one. And number two, in the very last scene that Amanda and Bobby had together that we saw before this in episode 20, she was figuring out that he had lied to her about his big Palm Springs trip. And even though we saw her arrive at this knowledge, it never comes up in this episode or the next. Like, she never brings it up.
No. And once again, in this episode and, you know, succeeding episodes, like, characters are just going and standing in their chargers for days at a time when cameras are not on them. It is really maddening.
It is. So then the couple's dinner has wrapped up and Peter and Bobby are having a not very polite fight about the check. Clip five.
I'll get that.
No, I invited you.
And the gesture was appreciated, but we all know things are a little tight for you right now, Bobby.
We do.
Things are never that tight, Peter.
Well, I'm sure it'll make a decent tax write-off. Right, Alicia?
Excuse me, I need to freshen up. I'll join you.
Next time, my tree.
You think there'll be a next time? You only agree to this fiasco to spend the evening with Amanda.
If you're implying that I'm still interested in her.
I don't trust you, Peter.
No, you shouldn't. Trust is highly overrated. Mostly by losers.
Ooh.
Oh, I mean, Jack Wagner is having a ton of fun right now on the show. I will say that. It is fun to watch him just snacking on the scenery and occasionally giving a little, you know, acting belch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, especially given what they've given him to work with, which is like all over the map.
Yeah.
Like from episode to episode changes motivation.
Mm-hmm. And we're sort of never let in on whether he's lying about anything. Like, we'll get into it. But again, given what certain other cast members are being tasked with and their relative success, this is really a delightfully fizzy and professional outing by Jay Wags. And we salute him.
So in the can, Alicia and Amanda mildly snipe at each other. Amanda claims she wants her friend Peter to be happy, and Alicia doesn't believe that Amanda set up the dinner just to make nice. And Amanda concedes that's true. Clip six.
Bobby's made a huge commitment with this new company. He's got a lot on the line. He's entitled to know where your loyalties lie.
If Bobby's uncertain about my intentions, he can fire me.
No, he doesn't want that. He He knows you're extremely capable and he likes you. Problem is Peter.
Translation. It's about you. Look, whatever history you and Peter have together, that's your business. And I'd appreciate it if you and Bobby stayed out of mine.
This dinner wasn't meant as a personal attack. I'm only interested in Bobby's success.
Because you care. Or because you're worried about your investment.
Both. Tread lightly.
Also, I feel like now that we know Alicia knows about the attempted murder charge, like, why that wouldn't come up here? Like, why did you date him after he tried to kill you?
Yeah, after he tried to yank your appendix out through your nose.
Yeah. Or even just ask, like, hey, what happened with that? I mean, if she has decided that, you know, if Amanda apparently forgave him, that the charges were not accurate or whatever, but, like, it's very weird that they had her find it out and then be like, well, all in a day. This is dating in LA. What are you going to do?
Must be a big misunderstanding.
Yeah.
Tee-hee. Okay, show.
Yeah. The other thing that's noteworthy about this scene, and you can see this in the visual aids, is that Amanda looks like a golden angel, and Alicia looks like no one on the set knew how to do the hair or makeup of a black woman because her foundation is wrong in, like, every single scene. She's, like, it's way too light and weird, and her hair from behind, it just looks like way overprocessed and bad. And now that we know more in our day about the things that black women go through when they're on sets, I just wonder if that was the case here because she's so beautiful and she does not look good in these scenes.
Yeah. And they couldn't find a, first of all, why are you wearing a basically formal prom dress to dinner? But like the amount of, I mean, if you had to drink every time you heard piano tinkling on this show, you would be in the hospital with a banana bag.
Yeah.
But that dress does not fit her. She has some really nice, like, fitted skirt suits that I'm really enjoying. But yeah, like, that particular color is like, what was the thought process there? Like, oh, well, she's African-American, so this sort of bright coral will naturally look good on her. Like, not all African-American skin tones are the same. Hello. Yeah. Yes, I also noticed these things and was sad about them.
Moving on. As they're walking out, Alicia pulls Bobby aside for some quick strategy talk about some meeting they have the next day. And left alone, Peter and Amanda are both glad they can be friends. And she adds that Alicia seems great. And Peter tightly says, it's funny how you can be in love with someone one day and find the same qualities in someone else the next. And he never expected to fall in love again after Amanda, but he has. But when he walks over to kiss Alicia with his eye, it's with his eyes open. So that he can creepily watch Amanda's reaction, and he is thus rewarded by seeing her look kind of disappointed. So that's where he's at.
It's so cartoony, though. Like, his whole face is cranked around, except for his lips. It just is like Warner Brothers, like Merry Melodies shit happening.
Yep.
So soapy.
And then we're at the first scene where there is work from the gala committee. And we talked about this in a podcast when I was first alerted about this by Kat Kinsman via Twitter. The gala committee, it was an art project. It was called In the Name of the Place. It was a covert conceptual artwork that was deployed on Melrose Place from 1995 to 97. And so the first instance where we actually see something that where they what they did, they call it variously safety sheets and dirty linens. This is a bed set for Peter's beach house because the pattern is composed of unrolled condoms. And the reason is it was against the law at the time to show an unrolled condom on TV.
Okay. That's so, right.
So they sneakily snuck in this safe sex PSA. Even though when you look at it close, and we'll have it in the visual aids, you can see, like, oh, okay, but you would, from a distance, it would just be like, as Sarah put in her visual aids, like, you know, another set of fakakta on the
sheets.
Show.
I had no idea that that was part of it. And I salute not just the idea generally, but the fact that I was like, more fucking Fido Dido reject sheets.
Yeah.
When, like, why is the Starverse like this with the bedding? And, like, I know why, but this really makes me admire the project for just being like, well, and also it's fugly. They'll never notice a thing.
Yep.
Correct. I didn't.
Yes. So we'll link this in the show notes so you can see both the overview of the project and then, you know, the future instances where we'll see it. And we'll call them out as they go on. I've flagged them, you know, for our docs going forward. The next one is a few episodes from now. Point being, Peter wakes up between his condom sheets, and while Alicia's still asleep, he opens her briefcase, and he's dumb enough to read the labels, legal requirements, and projected revenues aloud to himself.
Folders, 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 folders. No one labels shit like this.
No. And she wakes up, but she just listens for a minute and then decides she doesn't care and goes back to sleep. That's all we get for this episode. So we'll find out if there's a payoff for that next time. On to the B plot. Jane and Michael each find a new partner. In the studio in her weird velvet apron dress. You can see it in the visual aid. It's like a halter thing with a sheer top underneath.
If it were an actual work apron, it would be red. Like if it were something that they have on Project Runway to just keep the pin cushions in and stuff like that. Great. But if it's one of those like ballet tops that she was wearing all the time a couple seasons ago, new.
Yeah. Also, but I feel like 90. When you're sewing, don't wear sheer nylon. Like you're going to snag it.
Yeah. On a pin
or something. Anyway, Jane struggles to complete a garment for a presentation of some kind that's happening the next day, and she asks a visiting Allison to listen to her pitch, clip 7.
As you know, incredible new fabrics came out of the Orient this year.
Where are they? The fabrics. Most clients get a kick out of show and tell.
See, I'm wrong already. Richard always handled the pitch. My job was to sit in the back of the room and look complex and artsy.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't interfere.
Yes, you should. Allison, you are great at selling stuff. You could sell me.
Now, I could give you some ideas.
No, I'm serious. It could be great. You could come with me.
No, the buyer wants to hear the pitch from you. Besides, won't they wonder who I am?
You could be, I don't know, my director of marketing. Come on, Allison, please, just this once.
All right.
Thank you.
The Orient.
Yeah, it's not what we were saying in 1996.
No.
But also, like, the spoiler, we don't see this meeting. So the whole thing of, like, you can come and do it with me, like, never. We don't see Allison in it. So what's the
Goes
point?
Goes nowhere. I guess it was at the halfway cafe.
And, I guess.
No cameras. No cameras allowed.
Overall, a nation struggles to care about any of this. So.
do we? I'm not struggling that much. I just don't.
So then we join Michael and Kimberly waking up in bed at the beach house, giddily post-coital, clip 8.
Oh, just like the old days.
God, let's hope not.
I mean, the early days.
Right. Who could forget? You, the two-timing sleazebag adulterer, and me, the wicked conniving homewrecker.
Yeah. Wait, no. Post-Jane, pre-accident.
Oh, right. 2 glorious weeks.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
That's about how long it was.
Yeah. I just love that he's like, yeah. Wait. No. Like, no, you were right the first time. Yeah.
So he tells her to move back in, but she just wants to fuck, not have a relationship, especially not with him, since it would lower her worth. Again, pending multiple attempted murder charges, still somewhere, we think. And the other problem is that Michael is too high maintenance. Again, institutionalized for mental illness earlier this year. But mostly Kimberly doesn't want to ruin what they have now. So when Kimberly returns to her apartment, she finds a box of her stuff outside and Sydney looking extremely demented in her outfit, which will make marginally more sense later, but I don't want to spoil it. You'll see it in the visual aids. Like, the hat has a bow on it now. Like, it can't be under her, you know, it can't just be on her hair because no one's going to see it. Put it on the hat. Done deal. Sydney snits that Kimberly took Sydney's old apartment. Now she's taken Sydney's old bed in her old room, in her old beach house. And Kimberly reminds her that all those things plus the man were hers first. Clip 9.
Sydney, your behavior is very childish.
Maybe it just seems that way because you're so old.
This was like really a bizarre line that I still laughed at.
Mm-hmm.
Fine.
Yeah. But also, I mean, I'm not sure of the logic of like, you're letting me crash here. So now I'm kicking you out. This is not how renting a place works.
No.
Even if you're spending a lot of time there, she hasn't moved in, but whatever. Kimberly tries to shrink Sydney, but Sydney's not having it. Clip 10.
Look, despite our differences, I really do care about you. Now, I know that your relationship with Michael is rather unsettled at the moment.
Oh, stuff a sock in it, you quack. You two timed me worse than Michael ever did. As a doctor and as a roommate.
That is true.
Yeah. Also, she tried to blow up the complex. Why is anyone here?
Yeah. At the funeral, which we will get to, spoiler, Sydney tells Amanda about kicking Kimberly out, and Amanda just shrugs, which I guess she never really liked one of them more than the other. Yes, even taking the bombing into account. So why not? And at the hospital, a certain Mrs. Davis is out of patience for an absent Kimberly and possibly played by a contest winner. Clip 11.
Has to be.
I've got another client and two house showings in a half hour. Could you please give these listings to Dr. Shaw and have her call me immediately?
Mrs. Davis, I'm a nurse, not her secretary.
Well, she could certainly use one. And please tell Dr. Shaw if she misses another appointment, she can find a new real estate agent.
You know you're a bad actor when you can tell from just the sound of your voice how bad you are. Like, she's terrible. And we never find out where Kimberly is when she's missing this appointment. So, like, there's no reason for this part to exist. So, like, contest winner or someone's wife or girlfriend. Because this character doesn't need to be on the show.
No, absolutely not. Also, this is not how real estate agents behave. Reader, I married one. Come on.
I'm sure they're used to people canceling on them all the time.
Yeah, they are. I mean, they don't like it, but...
No.
But you're not... Like, they don't fire you. I wish they did. I tell Dan to do it all the time. And he's like, how do you want us to eat? And I'm like, hey, I have all the podcasts. Anyway. Shut up, contest winner, is my point. Her hair is also bizarrely terrible. It looks like it was fired out of something onto her head.
And her teeth, not to be rude, but also her teeth. Like, there's a picture in the visual aids. I'm sorry, but look at it and tell us we're wrong. You can't. So then Jane later tells Allison she had a great presentation. So Allison didn't even go. Again, what was the point of that scene either?
Yeah.
Other than to point out how Jane doesn't know how to do a presentation. Like, where are the fabrics you're talking about, dumbass? But anyway, they part and Jane and Jake are kissing when Richard shows up and there's some mild bickering and then clip 12.
I know I'm a thrill, but could you go back up to your own life, please?
I'm sure Joe's waiting for you.
So you still have your sense of humor. I was worried you still had your hopes up about the Jordan deal.
And you think that's a mistake?
Well, I heard you had a great meeting with him this afternoon.
Oh, and how do you know that?
I gave my presentation right after yours. Jordan liked my work. A lot.
No, he didn't.
Well, you may have done a good dog and pony act, but Mr. Jordan gave me the order.
I don't believe you.
It's true, Dick. I was there when he called. In fact, I just took Jane out to celebrate.
Talent always wins over trash. Night, Richard.
Mm.
Who cares?
Yeah.
Who?
Yeah.
Why is she still letting him get to her? Why can't he have any sort of delivery besides, I think I'm coming down with a cold. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, here it is. Those are the two modes.
Yeah.
Ugh, this storyline, like, I seem to remember it just, you know, all cylinders firing at the end of this storyline.
Mm-hmm.
But we're so many, many weeks away from that. And I just don't care. He's bad.
Yeah.
She's boring. Good. I'm glad someone finally called him Dick. Thank you, Jake. But who cares?
She is boring. It's so boring, in fact, that when she and Jake go inside to fuck, like, you can't even care about that. Like,
no.
Just none of it is good. The next night, a post-coital Jane wishes Jake didn't have to go back to Shooters. Fortunately, something happens to take her mind off him. Jordan, the company she just successfully pitched, has canceled their deal, meaning that it's like probably nighttime, but within the realm of like it's, you know, before nine or something. It's a reasonable time to get a business call ish. Just put a pin in that. So she very
sensibly,
on
your princess phone.
Right. So she wraps the sheet around herself to storm into the courtyard, screaming Richard's name on the way to Joe's door, which like other people live there. But anyway, clip 13.
Well, well, modeling your new sleepwear line?
That's a
pretty good my notes. Good one, Dick.
So then Joe comes to the door and she looks groggy as hell. Like, are we supposed to think she was asleep? The timeline of everything that's happening is so confusing.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah.
Anyway, Jane accuses Richard of fucking up her deal, and he gleefully admits that he did tell this Jordan that Jane's been working out of a garage. And even Joe seems disgusted by Richard now, but he ignores her to brag that he can produce the same designs for half the cost and half the time. And Jake has to hold Jane back from scratching Richard's eyes out, but then snits that Richard has hit rock bottom.
Maybe.
Yeah, and then Joe tries to smooth things over. Clip 14.
Look. Guys, let's just take some time and calm down.
I don't have time, Joe. And don't defend him. You're a photographer. You don't have a clue what the design business is really like.
Unfortunately, neither do you, Jane.
Well, you served him that one up on a platter.
Yeah. Ooh. T-ball champion, Dick.
Yeah. Also, like, for whatever we've been saying about, you know, the utility of having a full-time photographer on staff at this fashion design company, which, like, no. But that is what she's been doing for several months. So presumably she's learned some things about the fashion business in addition to the things she probably already knew because she was a photographer working
with fashion because we've
companies.
Seen her working with like
Models
since she
Inc.
showed yeah, since she showed up on the show. Yeah. This is the lane that she's in.
Yes. Inside. Joe continues to be grossed out by Richard's machinations and doesn't appear to agree that Jane would do the same to him if she had the chance, so I guess Jane's heel turn is definitely officially over now if we are supposed to agree with Joe. And then Kimberly's arriving to a showing for a house on the beach. Too late, as Mrs. Davis has just taken a deposit from someone else. She continues to be bad, and I looked her up. She has 5 credits on her IMDb. One of the others is a waitress on 90210 in 95. So again, I ask, whose wife or girlfriend was she? We never find out what caused Kimberly to keep jerking her character around. Still haven't. And we then see that Mrs. Davis's other client is Michael. And Kimberly complains that he can't keep her from renting the place. And he walks her out to explain what they're looking at is their ocean. It wasn't the same without her. They're inevitable because they've done every fucked up thing a couple can do, which true. And Kimberly... Yeah. Even can't really disagree. Michael thinks all that's left is the good stuff, and he can't wait, and he starts to walk off, and she follows, and we're going to find out in the next episode, spoiler, like, she did move into the beach house, so what did he put this deposit down for? This is such an expensive, dumb gesture.
Oh, God.
But that's the B-plot. Finally, our A-plot. Death won't stop Brooke bothering Billy. We pick up where we left off at the end of the last episode. Allison's about to go to the movies with Billy, Jane, and Jake when suddenly she decides she can't leave Brooke in her current state. And no one else agrees with her that Brooke is clearly not going to be okay. Clip 15.
You may not be showing it like that crazy broad back there, but Billy really needs you.
Okay. Broad is my thing, first of all.
Yeah.
Second, Andrew Chu's choice for communicating how much he needs Allison right now is to smirk.
Mm-hmm.
That's all he's been fucking doing.
Yep.
But Allison still has empathy, even for people who are very irritating, and just tells them to save her a seat as she heads back. So she is the one to find Brooke floating face down in the pool and jumps in to try and rescue her, calling for help. And Billy runs back to help Allison drag her out, starts doing CPR while Allison calls 911.
So badly. You've got to form a seal, motherfucker.
Yeah.
No one on set who had to know CPR could tell you this. Ugh.
Are we surprised that Andrew Shue's mouth was too wide open?
That's an excellent point.
Thank
no, we're
you.
Not.
Okay. So that is the credits. And then we're watching first responders prepare to take Brooke's body to the morgue. And this is the music playing over it. Clip 16. A woman died. Go deeper into the catalog of sub music that's available.
Or just don't have anything. And then they just fling what looks like a restaurant tablecloth over her. And they're like, nothing we could do. Let's go plating. Like, guys.
Yeah. So only now does Billy manage to actually look kind of shattered as he lets Allison put a blanket around him. She says she'll meet him back in the courtyard after she's changed out of her wet clothes, but he is busy dissociating. Clip 17.
We were just going to the movies.
Oh, Billy, it wasn't your fault. You tried to save her. We both did everything we could. It was just an accident. A terrible, awful accident.
Was it?
What?
I mean,
it's a fair question.
Yeah.
But
also, his catatonic acting is perfect for this. But unfortunately, it's like indistinguishable from every other emotion he's supposed to be portraying. So it's like this is really a trial.
Yes. It makes some very funny faces, though, which you will see.
He really does. Oh, my God.
Not intentionally funny. But funny.
Yeah. If you would like listeners to guess the over under on things that were captioned LLOL in these visual aids, please reach out to us at AWT90210 on Twitter.
So at the office, from which neither Allison nor Billy has taken a personal day.
Why?
It's the day after Brooke died. Yeah. It hasn't even maybe been 12 hours yet. So Amanda offers her condolences to Billy on the accident that killed Brooke and does not add how relieved she is that Brooke has no survivors to sue Amanda as the owner of the pool. Somehow, Brooke's funeral is going to be the next day. Like, as the meeting breaks up, meaning that Amanda closed with that instead of opening, mm-hmm. she says she wasn't expected to see Billy there. And he claims to feel bad about the previous night's events, but he and Brooke were getting divorced and she cut their emotional ties a long time ago. Okay. And Amanda pretends not to be horrified and barrels ahead. If he really isn't grieving, maybe he could take Brooke's toy client back. And when he's gone, Allison yells at Amanda under the impression that Amanda gives a shit what Allison thinks, I guess. Clip 18.
How could you do that? That man just lost his wife.
Which might matter if they had a real marriage. If Billy says he's moving on, I applaud his good sense.
Yeah, but only because it makes your life easier. Not everything in the world revolves around D&D.
Everything in this office does. If you need to mourn Brooke, take a personal day. If not, get back to work.
Seriously, everyone sure. Take a personal day.
Yeah.
God. So that night, there's an ill wind blowing through the courtyard and then a splash that wakes Billy up. And then clip 19.
Billy. So.
I mean, spooky.
Yeah.
Question mark.
So he comes out to the living room. The door is open. Brooke's ghostly voice is still calling his name. And there are only leaves in the pool. But there are, I wrote in my notes, little wet footprints leading from it to Billy's door. That you said they look too big. I thought it was impossible to tell from the scale how big they were. But
yeah, they also looked like they were made by someone wearing shoes, which like they probably were. And I understand that they're not going to like art direct this particular moment. It's not M. Night Shyamalan.
No, they got toes. So. They're barefoot. Yeah, they've got toes, toe prints.
Okay.
Like they're in toe shoes. Who's to say?
These are the things we discuss for work. So, maybe I need a personal day again.
So Billy closes the window and then glares out like fucking Scrooge or something, which you can also definitely see in the visual aids. But
it's so good. I mean, it's horrible, but it's so funny.
It's
he's so bad.
Ridiculous how bad he is. Anyway, Brooke is not done. Clip 20. It's not the best fake laughing I've ever heard. I mean,
Vincent Price is like picking up the phone and then he's like, you know what? No, not good. Not worth it.
Yeah. The next morning, Allison comes by before work to find Billy still asleep in a shitty IKEA armchair when there is a perfectly good couch right there. But they're supposed to be going to Brooke's funeral. Billy vaguely admits he had nightmares. Allison's returning the very few items that Brooke left at her place. Neither of them knows where the rest of her shit even is. And Billy says sometimes he thinks she died just to get back at him, which, like, sometimes it was 36 hours ago. Like, you're acting like it was months. But anyway, Allison's was angry when Haley died, too. Also in water by accident, by the way. Interesting commonality between father and daughter. But Billy reminds Allison that she loved Haley, whereas Billy and Brooke could no longer be civil to each other. Clip 21.
And to top it off, we weren't divorced, so all of her credit card bills are still on my tab. And I have 2 years left on the payments for her engagement ring.
Okay. You canceled her credit cards the day after you kicked her out, so you are definitely responsible for whatever she put on said cards before that. Also, if you overspent on a ring, that's on you. She was so gaga, you could have proposed with a fucking pop can pull tab. Like,
yep.
Your bad decisions are not her problem.
Yeah, no, they're really not.
So Billy was apparently trying to write Brooke's eulogy. Allison glances at it and calls it beautiful, but he says it's all lies. Whereas we know the idea that he wrote anything beautiful is the biggest lie of all.
Mm-hmm.
At the funeral, no one that Brooke knew before Billy has turned up, from what we can see, but there's a good turnout of people from the complex who thought she was a clown when she was alive. And Jake has had such a radical Caesar haircut inflicted on him that they had to write it into the dialogue. Supposedly, it took Jane's stylist 2 hours. No short men's haircut takes that long.
No.
It just doesn't.
No.
Come on. So everyone is full of weird compliments on the event Billy somehow threw together in one day, I guess, before and after he went to work. Clip 22.
Everything's beautiful, Billy.
Yeah, I don't usually rate these things, but that casket is gorgeous.
Oh, my God.
It just does not stop being funny. And her delivery, like, just imagine being Heather Locklear and being like, bitch says what? Like, why? But then she sold it. She really sold it.
She did.
Absolutely awful writing and situational imagining, but she sold it.
She
P.S.
did.
Though, the casket is fine. It's not gorgeous.
Sure.
Settle down.
She's also obviously at this funeral with, like, all but about 4 inches of leg showing. Like, basically her skirt covers her butt and that's it. And it's just like legs akimbo. So when Amanda gets a page from Lindy Toys, we learn that Brooke did not do any work at all on the account and that Billy will be dealing with it when he goes to the office after his estranged wife's funeral later today. Take a day. Anyway, Sydney rolls up as Amanda has stepped away to make a call. Clip 23.
Amanda, I know it's the 90s, but a cell phone at a funeral, very tacky.
Oh, just what I need. Style pointers from Gidget.
Look, hanging lights on this shit doesn't make it any less bad.
No!
You shouldn't have her taking calls at graveside. Like, they had a vibrate setting even back in, you know, olden times. And
they did.
Also, if you're going to have people making fun of Sydney's Gidget thing, maybe just stop doing the Gidget thing. Why is this even a thing?
Yes.
Ugh.
Then Billy addresses the mourners. Clip 24.
Oh, boy.
Before our Father Hawk begins his service, I just want to thank all of you for coming here today. Brooke Armstrong was a family woman. The bond that she shared with her father, Haley, was a tribute to... was a tribute to family loyalty. She also enjoyed her career. She was recently promoted to vice president of D&D advertising. And when she wasn't working hard as a creative member of the D&D team of the D&D team, she was a loving as a wife.
Here's the other thing. Literally 75% of the quote mourners also are valuable members of the creative team at D&D Advertising. You don't have to say the whole name.
No.
Also, she wasn't. Also, no one cares.
Yeah.
Also, this is not supposed to be funny, you guys. It's not supposed to be funny.
It's so not
funny.
But also, like, these are all your friends. Like, you could say anything. Who cares? No one is here to really mourn Brooke. They're here to support you. So just, like, shut up.
Yeah, just basically. Be like, this was a tragic death.
Yeah.
May she rest. And then sit down and shut the fuck up. Close your mouth, please, if you can.
Please,
I'm not sure you
please
can.
Close it. But anyway, after he is stalked off to collect himself, I guess, Allison gets up and smoothly takes over. And as she's leaving Billy's place that night, he thanks her for covering. He says he froze up because he kept staring at Allison, and he fucking keeps smirking as he goes on and on about how unable he was to make the audience cry for Brooke when Allison was all he could think about. And both of them are acting like this is cute. It's not. Like,
no.
You were getting divorced. She was still a person that you were married to, and she died a matter of hours ago.
Yeah. Because she was decompensating psychologically. Yes. Like, any compassion, I know it's a soap, but like narrating to Eeyore, who hasn't been that Eeyore-y lately, but whatever.
True.
Who you basically ditched because her incestuous father was getting on your nads, telling her that you basically had a semi at your dead wife's funeral because of her is inappropriate. Again, yeah. I understand that it's a nighttime soap, but guys, this is not sexy.
And like, this is also a mid-90s, you know, Darren Star, Aaron Spelling joint. Like, I know you want to have things in place for the finale, but the finale is like 10 episodes away.
I know. It's like 2 years off. Like, come on.
Yeah. So Allison declines Billy's invitation to stay with him that night since she's still working through her feelings about Brooke's death, which, you know, thinking maybe if she hadn't brought Brooke to D&D, Brooke and Haley might both still be alive, which, like, I'm not sure how accidental his death was, but sure. But Billy just thinks the only thing he and Allison did wrong was deny that they belong together. Clip 25.
I know you, Billy. You must be feeling something. If you keep blocking it out, you're going to make yourself crazy.
Go ahead. Carry all the guilt you want. Whatever compassion I had, Brooke sucked it out of me a long time ago.
For raising!
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
And also, how can you tell what feelings he is or is not having?
Seriously. So later, Billy is reading and drinking by the pool when there's a sudden gust of wind and his papers all go flying. And then a bank of fog rolls in over the pool. And Andrew Shue does not know what to do with his fucking face, as you will see in the visual aids. And then Brooke rises up from the water with a little spotlight around her. Clip 26.
Hello, Billy.
This isn't happening.
Did you miss me? Nice job at my funeral. What happened? Couldn't you admit that it's your fault that I'm dead?
This isn't happening.
Oh, yes, it is. And it is your fault. I came to you with so much love, and you gave me nothing but hate. Too bad Allison won't stay with you. I guess she knows you're a heartless, unfeeling bastard.
You can't run away from me. I'll never leave you.
Stop it.
I'll never leave you alone.
Stop it. Just get out of my life, Brooke.
Billy? Are you all right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm fine. Let's go back to bed.
What emotions are those?
Yeah.
It's like, I think I recognized a couple, including wants cat to get off counter, successfully applied Clearasil in an ad for same. Mm-hmm. Might smell a fart, but it could also be garbage.
Mm-hmm.
But those aren't emotions exactly. They're just bill motions, shoe motions. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, the problem is that nothing that Billy is going through in this plot line can map onto things that might happen while you're playing a soccer game. So he doesn't have the lived experience to draw from. You know? Right.
Whereas if the ghost of Diego Maradona had chased mm-hmm. him around the pitch.
Yeah.
I'm out of soccer facts, by the way. correctly using pitch, I'm done.
Mm-hmm. The next day, Billy pays Brooke's bill at the hotel and retrieves all her stuff. And on the top of a box is a list of potential slogans for Lindy Toys with "Stop playing games, start living them," circled in red. The full list is in the visual aids, of course. And at the meeting the next day, Mr. Lindy himself is annoyed that they don't still have the material he gave Brooke and doesn't seem to want to repeat what his goals are for the campaign so that they can all move forward. So Billy slides out that page of Brooke's slogan ideas, and just as Lindy is about to leave, Billy offers the one that was circled, which stops Lindy dead in his tracks. And Billy continues laying out the strategy with a foot up on Lindy's vacated chair like he's fucking Captain Morgan or something. Like,
I know.
This is in the visual aids, too.
That?
What is he doing?
Check out the double gusset on these Wranglers, buddy. Please stop.
Anyway, the theory is they're going to sell computer games the parents buy for their kids but can't stop playing themselves. And Lindy's like, that's more like it. And that night, Billy's asleep on the couch when a little water drips onto his cheek and Brooke is there leaning over him and he does a slapstick roll off the couch. Big episode for rolling off couches, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And she's everywhere he turns. And when he's confronted by her holding their wedding portrait, she asks why he can't see how beautiful they were. And did he hate her on their wedding day? Clip 27.
I never hated you. I just stopped caring.
Because Allison stole you away from me.
What do you want from me?
I don't want anything from you. I don't need your love anymore. Do you know why? Because you sold me your soul. And all it cost me was one little line. That silly little Lindy toy slogan. It's gonna make you a star. Every step you take, every bridge you burn, will be because of me.
Okay. He works at fucking advertising. Like, let's not add that, like, he's sold his soul to be really good at guitar. Like, he writes ads. He doesn't even write jingles.
No. And if this is supposed to be a projection of his own guilt, then why isn't it better at it?
Yeah, so this ends with a ghostly kiss, and then Billy wakes up with a start. It was just a dream, and his confused face after this is just brutal. So all of these are in the visual aids. So he picks up the framed wedding photo from the top of the box and briefly regards it before chucking it at the wall and growling at Brooke to get out of his life and then moaning it a few more times and asking the empty room, what is happening to him?
And then mushing his face around like he's in a silent film, which I really wish that he were.
Yeah. Spoiler. None of this comes up in the next episode at all.
No.
At all.
I think we're just supposed to think he's possessed now, but okay.
Right. Oh, well.
Not by Uta Hagen.
That is for certain. Let us close it out by naming our episode MVP. Kristen Davis, man, talk about making the most of your last hours on a show. Both episode 20 and this one.
Honorable mention to Peter, who is just like, you know, eye popping and mugging and having a delightful time. But I'm going to say Brooke, because she is inspiring some truly hilarious, desperate shit on the part of Andrew Hsu. None of it is working, and yet all of it is working in tickling my funny bone. It is very good.
I also have an honorable mention, which is to the gala committee for the condom sheets, because that's awesome.
Yes,
and I'm really
indeed.
Excited that we're into the era of their stuff that they did, so we can talk
that
about it.
That is fantastic.
Podcast. Least valuable player. Andrew Hsu, duh.
Well, I mean, Alan, like at least Andrew Hsu I am laughing at or sort of trying to figure out what's happening. Alan is just like, fuck off, bruh. We have a David. Get out. Next time on Again With This, Matt, spoiled for choice, continues to make the wrong ones. The de-signing women of Melrose get into it yet again. And the haunting of Bill House takes its toll on the entire profession of acting. The entire profession of ophthalmology would like a word before you check out our visual aids, which you'll find for this and every other episode of Again With This at againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you can find links to our very special 90210 book. You can follow us on Twitter at AWT90210. And you can join our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis. Any level of support gets you extra episodes. I'm Gorgeous Casket, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Blanky Toga, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is disruptive scene partner David T. Cole. Talk to you next time. Ooh, what?